Welcome to iFormRx Podcast, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iFormRx, and today we're going to talk about self-monitoring of blood glucose, specifically the value of performing blood glucose monitoring in patients with type 2 diabetes who do not use insulin. There is reasonably strong evidence that self-monitoring of blood glucose can improve glycemic control and reduce the risk of hypoglycemia in patients with type 1 diabetes who use multiple daily injections of insulin or who are on an insulin pump. It's a slightly different story in patients who do not use insulin. A Cochrane meta-analysis some years ago questioned the benefits of self-monitoring in patients taking only oral medications. Nonetheless, most clinical practice guidelines have continued to recommend routine home glucose monitoring to patients, regardless of treatment regimen. Moreover, advertisements on television and in magazines aimed at consumers have often pushed the notion that frequent blood glucose monitoring was imperative to good health. Some health systems, like the VA, currently limit glucose testing supplies, but others have been reluctant to do so. A recent study published in January 2017 in JAMA Internal Medicine examined the impact of limiting blood glucose strip supplies to patients. Joining me today to talk about this study are Dr. Kai-Ann Wissi and Dr. Don Fouquet. Dr. Wissi is a clinical pharmacy specialist at the Swedish Health System in Seattle, Washington, and Dr. Fouquet is primary care clinical pharmacy specialist at the Providence Medical Group in Portland, Oregon. Kai-Ann and Don wrote a commentary for iFormRx entitled, "Testing the Limits on Blood Glucose Monitoring, Can We Safely Cut Back?" Kai-Ann, Don, thanks for joining me today for the iFormRx podcast.
Thanks, Stuart. Glad to be here.
Thank you, Stuart, for inviting us.
So, Kai-Ann, if you had to briefly summarize in just a few sentences the study entitled Association of a Blood Glucose Test Strip Quantity Limit Policy with Patient Outcomes, a population-based study, which was published in the January issue of JAMA Internal Medicine, to someone who hasn't read that paper, what would you say?
This study was a time series analysis assessing the effects of a test strip limitation policy for Canadian patients who were eligible for a federal drug program that's set up similar to the United States Medicare program. Test strips were limited according to patients' diabetes therapy, so limitations were mostly affecting those who were on oral agents versus insulin. The primary outcome this study looked at was the emergency department admissions for either hyperglycemia or hypoglycemia, and their secondary outcome was assessing changes to A1C. So by the end of the study period, they did find that after initiating test strip limitations, there was a non-significant reduction in emergency department visits for hyperglycemia and hypoglycemia, and they did not find any change in A1C control. So while quality of care did not seem to be negatively impacted, the test strip policy limitation did lead to a significant cost savings. So there was a 20% decrease the first year after introduction of these limitations from $107 million to $83 million. So the authors concluded from this analysis that limiting the test strips for these patients was not associated with worsening short-term outcomes, and therefore cost savings could be implemented without causing patient harm. This study also adds to the evidence that routine self-monitoring of blood glucose does not improve glycemic control in patients not on insulin.
So tell us a little bit about the strengths and limitations of this study. Are there any major sources of bias, confounders, other threats to the internal validity of this study?
So there was several strengths, I believe, to this study. It did utilize hard outcomes like emergency department visits versus solely surrogate outcomes like A1C to really demonstrate the safety of the policy limitation. They also looked specifically at a sensitivity analysis for high-volume test strip users, so patients who had used more than the limitation the year prior. They also found that those patients did not have any worsening of outcomes either. So I think there were several strengths. However, there are limitations as well. The biggest one being that the study only assessed short-term outcomes. So for a year and a half after the implementation of this policy. And so it's not known whether those limitations will affect glycemic control long-term or if it could affect microvascular or cardiovascular outcomes long-term. Also, as an observational claims-based study, they could not assess how often changes were made based on the patient self-monitoring their blood glucose. And as we know, self-monitoring of blood glucose is only beneficial if it's used to guide therapy changes. The study also did not look at specific groups of patients. So considering those with uncontrolled diabetes or recently diagnosed diabetes or patients who are on multiple daily doses of insulin. So restrictions could potentially impact these groups differently.
So clearly this is a controversial issue. Indeed, results of our most recent iFormRx survey indicate a majority of the practitioners believe patients with type 2 diabetes should test their blood glucose every day or every other day, even if they're not using insulin. As you're aware, another related study was presented at the American Diabetes Association meeting in June 2017, and that manuscript was recently published also in JAMA Internal Medicine, found that there was no clear benefits from routine monitoring of blood glucose in patients who are not using insulin. So tell us a little bit more about the study by the Monitor Trial Group at the University of North Carolina. Are the results of these two studies congruent with one another, and how should these two studies inform practice and clinical practice guidelines?
So the Monitor trial was a randomized prospective trial evaluating whether routine self-monitoring of blood glucose with or without patient feedback messaging affected the A1C or health-related quality of life in non-insulin-treated patients with diabetes. The three treatment groups were no self-monitoring blood glucose, self-monitoring blood glucose alone, or self-monitoring blood glucose with tailored messaging. What's similar to our study is that there was no difference in A1C or health-related quality of life between no self-monitoring of blood glucose and the self-monitoring blood glucose groups, regardless of patient feedback messaging. Patients in the self-monitoring blood glucose groups were more likely to have therapy adjusted, either added or doses increased than those who were not monitoring. However, the duration of this trial may not have been long enough to determine a significant change in A1C. While the Monitor trial did not set out to measure diabetes-related emergency department visits and hospitalizations, the adverse event section did not yield a high number of such events. So both studies support the argument against routine self-monitoring of blood glucose for patients not on insulin.
So I want you to imagine you're seeing an obese 61-year-old Asian woman in the primary care clinic today. In addition to type 2 diabetes, the patient has high blood pressure, dyslipidemia stage 3, chronic kidney disease with an estimated GFR of 48. The patient currently takes sitagliptin, empagliflozin, lisinopril, amlodipine, simvastatin, and low-dose aspirin. And a patient says she's great. She feels fine, that she has no episodes of hypoglycemia and can't ever recall experiencing low blood sugar reactions in the past. She provides you with a blood glucose logbook where she has dutifully recorded all of her blood glucose readings over the past 3 months, but you suspect that many of these readings are fabricated because the numbers are somewhat suspicious. They all are between 70 and 120. Nearly all of them are even numbers, and they all appear to have been written with the same pen. Her blood pressure today is 128 over 64, and her heart rate is 86. Her A1C measured last week was 7.8. Would you encourage this patient to continue self-monitoring of blood glucose? And if so, how would you delicately confront this patient regarding your suspicions? And would your answer be any different if this patient was taking a sulfonylurea, or if her most recent A1C was 6.5%, or conversely, 8.5%?
So this is a situation that is unfortunately not uncommon. Prior to deciding on continuing self-monitoring of blood glucose, what I usually do is I ask the patient to bring their glucose meter into clinic to confirm that the meter is still accurate. and explained that the A1C of 7.8% correlates to an average glucose of approximately 170 to 180 milligrams per deciliter. After the patient brings the meter in and we review it, based on the findings, I would either facilitate getting her a new meter if the meter's not working properly or discuss the rationale for self-monitoring of blood glucose. While her risk for hypoglycemia is lower based on her current medications, there is still the possibility that she could experience hypoglycemia with or without symptoms. So if her meter is accurate and she's having numbers of 70, given her age and her renal function, would be a little concerned that she may not be able to feel a low blood sugar, or she may be having higher glucose values at other times of day that is affecting her A1C.
And if she was taking a sulfonylurea, then her risk for hypoglycemia would be higher. However, still based on this study, I would still discourage regular daily monitoring, but really just ensuring that she's able to use her glucometer correctly. And I would educate her on signs and symptoms of hypoglycemia, when she should be checking for that, and the appropriate treatment.
Similarly, if her A1C was 6.5%, we would discourage daily monitoring, but ensure that she's able to use her glucometer correctly. Again, educate her on signs and symptoms of hypoglycemia and appropriate treatment. If there's a suspicion of hypoglycemic unawareness, I may consider increasing the frequency of monitoring and adjust therapy accordingly until hopefully the hypoglycemic unawareness resolves and we may decrease monitoring again at that time.
And then finally, if her A1C was 8.5%, then I would schedule a face-to-face follow-up, have her bring her glucose meter in and really review that with her. If we do find that her meter is accurate, then I would suggest self-monitoring of her glucose values, and I would ask her to check postprandial for a week and then follow up and adjust her therapy based on those results. Once she's stabilized, then I would discourage daily self-monitoring of glucose until her next A1C would be due in 3 months. However, if she did need to get started on insulin based on her glucose values, then I would recommend at least a once daily self-monitoring of blood glucose.
Kyanne, Dawn, I want to thank you both for joining us today to discuss the self-monitoring of blood glucose in patients who do not require insulin therapy. And I think it's clear from your comments that you believe that self-monitoring of blood glucose may be important when people suspect they're having hypoglycemia, when we're actively adjusting medications, or in patients who have poorly controlled diabetes in which we want to encourage self-awareness of the fact that they're not well controlled and we're actively adjusting medications. But for many, many patients, monitoring of self-glucose routinely does not make economic sense and does not lead to better outcomes. And therefore, routine blood glucose monitoring needs to be reconsidered. Well, tell us what you think. Only iFormRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free. Sign up today. Until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.